We're going to be talking about Samson tonight. So get your Bibles and turn to the book of Judges. And this is a rather interesting piece of scripture to study. And as you're turning over there, there is a story that I read about Oliver Cromwell. Don't know if you know that name at all or not. An English military guy, politician from the early 17th century. And Oliver Cromwell was having a portrait done of himself. The artist was coming in to paint a portrait of Oliver Cromwell, and he had a rather disfiguring wart. Was it on his chin? It was on his face. I think it was on his chin. Somewhere on his face he had a disfiguring wart. And so the artist suggested to Oliver Cromwell, you know, why don't you pose in such a way for this painting that just kind of put your head in your hand, and that way I can paint you with your hand covering that wart. That way this great picture that's made of you, it won't have this wart kind of standing out there. And perhaps you've heard the story. Oliver Cromwell said, no, you paint me just as I am. Wart and all. When you turn and study the book of Samson, guess what we see with Samson? We see Samson just as he was, warts and all. You know, that's an interesting thing about the Bible. Sometimes when you read about Bible characters, it's not all good. You know, if this was actually a document put together by man, and man was writing his favorite stories about his greatest heroes, would he include all of the not-so-good stuff about those heroes? You know, why would you put that in? It makes them look bad. You could just leave that stuff out and just present the good stuff, and it would be, in man's mind, just as good. One of the evidences that the Bible is inspired of God is that it wasn't left up to man what to put in there. God gave us the full picture, at least what God wanted us to see, of this man named Samson. And he's an interesting character because he's one of the favorites that we want to teach our kids, right? Who's the strong judge? Samson. You know, what Samson do? But when you start teaching your children about Samson, you get kind of tricky with some of the things that, because do I, I don't know, do we teach, how much do we teach? Because if you get in and read about Samson, there's some stuff in there you don't want your kids to know. You know, so here's this Bible hero that's, that's not so heroic. And that's not so biblical. So we have a Bible hero that's sometimes neither one of those things. So how do you deal with that? That's kind of tricky. Those of you who teach children, that can be kind of tricky. Because even some of his great feats with his strength, when and why were they done? Sometimes for not reasons that we want to tell our children the when and the why behind what was happening. And so as we look at Samson tonight, we're going to kind of see this guy, warts and all, but I want us to see, look in Judges 13. He's in Judges 13, 14, 15, 16. He's got four chapters in the book of Judges, and there's no way for us to cover all of this. I'm going to try to pick up some of the highlights and give us kind of an overview of some things that we can see. But as you turn to the book of Judges, you have Samson in the book of Judges. So what does that make Samson? It makes him one of the judges. And we have the word judge, and so in our minds, what do we think? Black robe, you know, up sitting up on the, you know, at the bench. He's got sitting behind a desk. He looks like he's paying attention, but he's actually playing on his iPhone while the guy is interrogating the witness. Right? I mean, what do we think when we think about this judge? We've got this image, you know. If you go over to England, what now? What picture do you have of the judge? Oh, okay. Now we've got some hair. Well, that'd be interesting, right? You got some hair going on. There's a lot of stuff. Is that the, when we turn to the book of Judges, is that what we see? Do we see somebody sitting sitting at a bench with a gavel in his hand and banging the gavel and pronouncing guilty or not guilty, or what are the judges? A leader. They are leaders. A good word for judges is that they are deliverers. What's going on in this period of the book of Judges? This is kind of a dark period in Israel's history. Because here is a 300-year period where they are continually going through the same cycle over and over and over. You know what that cycle is? You've heard this cycle talked about? Where God's people are living just fine. They're living faithful to Him. As long as they've got a leader, as long as they've got a deliverer that's out there leading them like Gideon, then they're doing pretty good with God. But when that deliverer dies, what happens? Well, they fall into sin. And they start sinning against God. And when they sin against God, their hearts are hardened. They don't care that they're sinning against God. And so God allows their enemies to come in and take over. And the enemy that we read about in the days of Samson are the Philistines. So God hears His people in sin, not repentant at all. So God allows the enemy to come in and to oppress them, to reign over them. Is that a nice thing? Why would God let that happen? Why would God let the enemy come and take over and rule over His people? To teach them, somebody says? To get their attention? Does sin have, what's that C word? Consequences? Does sin have consequences? Do we need to learn that? Did they need to learn it? Sin has consequences. So here they are sinning against God. And what's God supposed to do? Oh, well, you know, we'll go along with this. That's all right. I'll just let them. No problem. You sin all you want and I'll just keep being here for you all the time. And you don't need to worry about, is that what happens? No. So here comes the consequences of sin. They fall into oppression of the people, to the enemy. And sometimes they stay there for years. Sometimes they stay there for decades. Hello? McFly? You remember the movie? Hello? I mean, are you serious? I've got a choice. I can be living fine with God, or I can be living under the oppression of the enemy. Well, they live under the oppression of the enemy until they reach a point where they realize, oh, wait a minute. We don't have to live like this. We're the children of Israel. We have a special privilege with God. And so they cry out to God for deliverance. And what does God do? God sends a deliverer slash a judge. God sends a deliverer to deliver them out of the oppression from the enemy. Then they start this cycle again where they're living faithfully to God. Deliverer dies. What happens? Fall into sin. Their sin leads to the oppression of the enemy. They stay there. And this cycle just keeps going and going. Fortunately, nothing like that happens to us in our lives. Fortunately, we learn from our mistakes the first time, right? And we never repeat things, and we never sit. When we commit a sin, we never do that same sin again. We learn the first time, and we just scratch that off the list. I'll never commit that a sin again, and we move on to another sin, right? Is that the way it works? Well, not always, right? Do we sometimes enter into a cycle? It's sometimes hard to get out of. Sin not only has consequences, sin is addictive. Isn't it? If it wasn't addictive, why would we do it? If it wasn't appealing, why would we do it? If there wasn't something there that was alluring, well, why would we go and do it? You know, I'm sorry, but is eating liver and onions, is that appealing? For some of you it is, and I'll pray for you. Okay? But there are some things just like, yeah, no thank you. You know, the devil knows not to use that as a temptation, right? Because, you know, that's just not going to work. But does the devil know what can get us? And so that, anyway, we come to the book of Judges and you've got this cycle going on. You come to Samson, he's one of those deliverers of God's people. He's one of these judges. And yet he's not one that you would just put on a pedestal and say to your children, why don't you grow up to be like Samson? I don't think so. There's some things there we don't want you to be like. But he's the strong judge. Now, why was he strong, by the way? Because he had a membership down at LA Fitness? What was his deal with his strength? Ah, that's That's why I'm so weak, right? Is because I have short hair. If I would just grow it out, then maybe I, you know, is that the way, is that what you're saying? Is that the way that it works? Oh, okay. All right. So could I be strong with short hair, maybe? So here's Samson. Now, what's the problem here? Look in Judges 13 and verse 1. What's the first word you have in Judges 13 and verse 1? Again. What do you think is going to be happening here? You got this cycle going on, and they're not finished with it. Again, the children of Israel did what was right in the eyes of the Lord, right? Again, the children of Israel did what was pleasing to God, right? Hello, McFly. Again, the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord, cycle, and the Lord delivered them into the hands of the Philistines for... Serious. How long is 40 years? Hello. They're there for 40 years. Now, Philistines, you've heard of these people before, right? I mean, this isn't just some unknown group. Here you're reading in the book of Judges about the Philistines, and you're going to go into the life of David, and you're going to read about the Philistines. This was one of the great enemies of God's people. But here is the enemy of God's people, the Philistines. They are under oppression to the Philistines. And guess who God is going to raise up and use to deliver them? Look at the end of verse 5. We'll come back and look at some of these other verses. But look at the end of verse 5 where it says about Samson in this last little, what is this, last dozen words of verse 5 or so. He shall begin to deliver Israel out of the hand of the Philistines. That's God's plan. As we begin this study of Samson, that's God's plan for Samson. Did God fulfill his plan? You can just say yes. You don't even have to know the rest of the story. Did God fulfill his plan with Samson? Yes. Did God successfully use Samson to, what does the verse say? Begin to deliver. Not to deliver fully, but to begin to deliver. We know he wasn't delivered fully. Why? Because we know when we go to the book of 1 Samuel, they're still there. They're still being dealt with. But God was going to use Samson to begin to deliver God's people. Now, Samson has got a lot of issues, and we're going to see some of those tonight. Samson was involved in a lot of sinful activity. Was that okay with God? No. But did God still use him to accomplish his will? Yes. And so somebody says, oh, so Samson's sins were not that big of a deal. Well, let's see. Did God use somebody called Nebuchadnezzar to fulfill his will? Yes. Was Nebuchadnezzar a believer? Was Nebuchadnezzar a follower of God? No. Does God condone Nebuchadnezzar's behavior and his idolatry by the fact that he used him? No. But God uses individuals to accomplish his will. Samson is one of those. And so when we come to study this book about this man, the strong judge, the man who has incredible strength, the reason that God is using him is to begin to deliver his people. And so God is going to be with him through this process, even when we begin to look at this man and see, you know, there's some things here that are, he's not behaving, he's not doing some things that are right, but you need to see God's big picture. That God has a purpose for his people that is bigger than just Samson. And so Samson is being brought along as a deliverer to bring God's people out of this oppression that they are into the Philistines for 40 years. So, with that, just as some information. Samson's the strong judge. He's the strong man. I want us to back up for just a minute. I want us to look in chapter 13. I want us to look at his parental background. Do parents, here's a tricky question. Do parents have anything to do with the development of the values and the morals and the future life of a individual who is brought up in their care? Hopefully, right? Sometimes we don't know. Sometimes we're not sure if we do. But here's God planning to use a man to deliver his people. And he not only chose the man, he chose the parents. Because God, Where was Samson when God chose him to be his deliverer? Not yet born. He's not only not yet born, he's not yet anything. He's not around. Why? Well, because his mother is barren. Look in verse 2. There was a certain man from Zorah of the family of the Danites whose name was Manoah. And his wife was barren and had no children. Wow. You know, if you're going to choose a family to deliver your people, God, I'm not sure this was the right one to choose. She can't have kids. This is going to be is this a problem for God? When someone's barren, is that an issue for God? We've seen before. That's not. But God chooses this man and this woman, and he chooses them to be the ones that he's going to bring about deliverance for his people from. And not only chooses them, but something I want to talk about a little bit more is that when you look at these two people, when you look at the home that Samson's going to be raised in, he's raised by a mother and a father who truly shared life together. All of the verses that are on the screen, we're not going to read all of those, but all of the verses on the screen mention Manoah and his wife together. Every time you read about them, they're mentioned together. It will either say in some of these verses, Manoah and his wife, or it'll talk about the fact that she came to her husband. Or sometimes when they're having a discussion, or when they're talking to the angel of the Lord, or when they're praying to God, they use the pronouns we and us. There is a togetherness about them that even when they were being talked about as parents, it was being talked about as his father and his mother. It was always talked about. The two of them were always talked about together. Is that insignificant? Here's a mother and a father. Here's a husband and a wife. And every time you read about them being a unit. Isn't that the way God made marriage? It seems like there's a verse in the Bible where the Bible says, the two shall become one flesh. What does that sound like? They're together. They operate as one. They operate as one unit. And that's the way Manoah and his wife. Would that be a good home for God to raise up a deliverer out of? Forget the fact that he was given miraculous strength, as it were. Would that be the home where somebody could be raised to be a strong person? Forget the physical side of it. Could somebody be raised with a strength in a home where a husband and wife are together? What's better for a child? Husband and wife together or not together? What's better for a child? For today's homes, they're like, y'all ever watch, race cars? You ever watch car races? You watch NASCAR, you watch Indy. And, the driver's out on the track. It's just him, out on the track. And then every once in a while, what does he do? Comes into the pit stop, stays there for 13 and a half seconds if the team's really good, and then he's on his way. That's what homes are like these days. There's like a pit stop. You know, the family member's out there. Okay, I'm going to run home. Okay, got to change clothes, got to get to bite. Okay, see you later, and I'm on my way again. And that's like a lot of homes today. It's just running in for a pit stop. All right, got to get stopped. All right, I'm out of here. How does that work for a family? How does that work for children? Do children need a mom who's at home spending time with them? Do moms need to spend time with their children? Do dads need to spend time with their children? And instead of our homes being like a pit stop, do we need sometimes for our homes to be the place where we all come and congregate? And we sit down. We slow down. And we talk. And we allow there to be time. And I know in this day and age that we feel like that's impossible. Sometimes I look at some other I don't know if I should say this or not. Sometimes I look at some other church calendars, and I see they've got stuff going on almost every night of the week. And I wonder if they're doing their families a favor by scheduling something almost every night of the week for them to do. I wonder if that's doing the family a favor. I know it's intended to do the family a favor, but do you know what families need? Families need time together at home. Now, problem is, that's not happening today. And so sometimes the church has stepped in, well, we'll just plan some activities to get everybody together. And the church, do not misunderstand me, because I'm one that plans church activities, right? So do we need activities with brothers and sisters in Christ? Yes. But does the family need time? But what do? We start making excuses. Well, we're just too busy. You know, we families make excuses to each other. We've got too much going on. If you've got too much going on, then you've got too much going on. Here was, and I'm spending more time on this point than I intended to. Manoah and his wife are raising a son to deliver God's people. He's going to be a strong man. Where is he getting his strength? Well, we know he's getting his strength from the Nazarite vow. But where would your children get their strength? From a home where you've got a mother and a father who are there and providing that strength for him. Now, so the angel Lord comes to Manoah's wife in verse 3. She says, the angel says, "Indeed now you are barren and have borne no children, but you shall conceive and bear a son. Now therefore, please be careful not to drink wine or similar drink, not to eat anything unclean." By the way, you're going to read that same statement about three times in this passage, like it's something that's important for her. Verse 5, "For behold, you shall conceive and bear a son, and no razor shall come upon his head. For the child shall be a Nazarite to God from the womb." We don't, without Old Testament knowledge, we don't know what that is. And without Old Testament knowledge, we read that and we think, oh, he's going to be a Nazarene like Jesus was from Nazareth. Well, you got the same first three letters, but it has nothing to do with Nazareth or being a Nazarene. Go back for just a second to Numbers chapter 6. And we're not going to take time to read all of this, but I want you to see something that's important in Numbers chapter 6 about being a Nazarite. Okay? And that is what when the angel of the Lord came to Manoah's wife and was explaining to her that while she had been barren, she was going to have a son, and she was to raise this son to be a Nazarite. And by the way, the Nazarite was one who was not supposed to, he was to separate himself from wine and drink in verse 3, but not just the man, the mother was to do the same. But there is a key word, if you're in Numbers chapter 6, there's a key word, and I want you to see if you can pick it out as we read through this. What is the key? What is it about a Nazarite that makes them different? Look at Numbers 6 and verse 2. "Speak to the children of Israel." The Lord says to Moses, "Speak to the children of Israel and say to them, when either a man or woman consecrates an offering to take the vow of a Nazarite," he wants to be a Nazarite, "to separate himself to the Lord, he shall separate himself from wine and similar drink. He shall drink neither vinegar made from wine nor vinegar made from similar drink. Neither shall he drink any grape juice nor eat fresh grapes or raisins." There is a line that is drawn. "All the days of his separation, he shall eat nothing that is produced by the grapevine from seed to skin. All the days of the vows of his separation, no razor shall come upon his head until the days are fulfilled for which he separated himself to the Lord. He shall be holy. Then he shall let the locks of the hair of his head grow. All the days that he separates himself to the Lord, he shall not go near a dead body. He shall not make himself unclean, even for his father or his mother, for his brother or his sister, when they die, because his separation to God is on his head. All the days of his separation, he shall be holy to the Lord." Did you pick up on a key word that's used how many times here to describe what the Nazarite vow is all about? Oh, you picked up on it. Separation. What does that mean? You saw the other word in there. He's to be holy. There were things that were he was to do that were to separate him from everyone else. There were things that he was not to drink to separate himself. He was not to allow any razor to come upon his head in order to separate himself. Now, was it just to separate himself so that he was different from everybody else? No, it said that he was to separate himself to the Lord. It wasn't just separating himself from everybody else. It was separating himself to the Lord. That was the purpose of the Nazarite vow. So here is Samson to be raised to be a Nazarite. And this is what the angel of the Lord tells his mother even before he is born, that he is to be separate from everyone else. He is to be made holy even from before his conception. His mother is to be ready for this to transpire in his life. And so you come back to Judges chapter 13. And it's at the end of verse 5 where he tells his mother her son is going to begin to deliver Israel out of the hand of the Philistines. So here in verse 6, you have one of those verses where it says the woman came and told her husband. Her husband wasn't with her, so she goes and tells her husband everything that happens. So here's a mother and a father who are together. They are spending time together. But the what is the second or third thing? Whatever. The third thing I want to see about them is that his parents were prayerful. Notice the first thing Manoah does. She comes and says, the man of the God came and told me this. And what did Manoah do in verse 8? He prayed to the Lord. And he said, oh my Lord, please let the man of God whom you sent come to us again and teach us what we shall do for the child who will be born. He heard that he was going to be a father. And what was the first thing he did? I got to talk to God about this. Some of you, when you first heard you were going to be a father, maybe you talked to God too. Lord, what did I get myself into? Maybe you're like Manoah. Lord, I don't have a clue what I'm supposed to do. Did you ever feel clueless when you were becoming a parent? Before you became a parent? Like, what am I supposed to do? Did you go and talk to any other parents who looked like they were successful? And said, you know what? We need some tips from you. Tracy and I went and talked to Dan and Lonnie Fuller. We said, what advice do you have? Because Dan and Lonnie Fuller had raised a very good family. Sorry, Kristen. They had raised a very good family. And we thought, you know, if we could get a little bit of Dan and Lonnie in our home, we might be doing pretty good. But you know what would be better than talking to Dan and Lonnie? Talking to God. Saying, God, we don't know what we're doing. Can you help us out? Now, after you become a parent, then you learn everything, right? I mean, that's before you become a parent. You say, God, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. But after you become a parent, you figure it all out. The child comes, you're like, oh, this is a piece of cake. You know, I didn't realize this would be so easy. I know exactly what I'm supposed to do, right? Is that the way it worked? Really? Didn't work that way for you? Okay. Well, all right. So when you become a parent, and your child behaves in a certain way that makes you say, oh, Lord, what did I get myself into? See, you're already talking to God. You're already on the right track. So instead of just saying it in an exclamatory way, say it in a prayerful way that says, God, I need your help. What kind of... You think it was good for Samson to be raised in a home where his parents prayed? You know, being raised in a home where your parents don't just pray in your absence, but they pray in your presence. Would that help Samson to grow up to be a strong man? Forget the physical side. Would it help your daughter or your son today to grow up to be a strong man or woman? To be raised in a home where they see you and hear you pray. Samson had everything going for him. He's being raised in a home that's giving him great potential for strength. He's being raised in a home where his mother and his father are obviously prayerful people. There was a story I read about a man who was, a young man, probably 18 or 19, serving in the military in World War II, overseas. And he was raised in a Christian home up in Nashville. And he was overseas during World War II, serving in the military, and he and his newfound buddies in the military decided to go out late one night, and they were going to go down to a particular establishment and engage in some things that would not have been appropriate for this Christian young man to do, but, you know, went in wherever he was, do as they were ever going to do. And so, you know, this is just what we do. We're military guys. And so they were on their way to this place to engage in certain activities. And he happened to look at his watch. And he stopped. And his buddy said, "What are you doing?" He said, "I can't go." "What do you mean you can't go? You know, you're chickening out on us? Come on, man, don't be a chicken." And he looked at his watch again. And he said, "I can't go." And I said, "What gives?" And he looked at his watch and he said, "Right now, it is Wednesday night at 7 o'clock back at home. And my mom is going down," and back then they didn't call it midweek service or Bible study, they called it prayer meeting on Wednesday night. He said, "My mom is going down to prayer meeting right now. And I know what's on her heart when she goes down to prayer meeting, and it's me. And I can't go and do this while she's going and doing that." And he didn't go. And his buddies didn't go either. What would happen if we raise our children in homes where they're guarded by prayer, where it's built within them a love of God and a love for prayer and a level of trust that says, "I trust you because I have been praying for you"? Imagine Samson being raised in that home. Last thing about his parents. We're not even going to get on to this other stuff. His parents were consumed with the will of God. When Manoah prayed, "Teach us what we shall do for the child who will be born." Not, "We're going to do whatever we want for this child." "Lord, what do you want us to do?" And so the angel of the Lord came back. As Manoah prayed, the angel of the Lord came back to the woman again when she was in the field in verse 9. So she runs and gets her husband, brings her husband to meet the angel of the Lord. And so he comes and meets him. He says, "Are you the same one who appeared to my wife?" "Yes, I'm the same one," at the end of verse 11. So Manoah says in verse 12, "Now let your words come to pass. What will be the boy's rule of life and his work?" What are we supposed to do? What do we need to know? What we are interested in more than anything else is the will of God. We want the will of God to be done in our child's life. Would you please tell us what that is? Here were a mother and a father who were not interested in raising a boy who was allowed to follow his own inclinations. They were interested in raising a boy that would know the will of God. We've got too many parents today who are not interested in training their children in the way that they should go. They're a little more interested in allowing their children to experiment and find the way that they want to go. And so there are parents in the church, parents, who make statements like, "Well, you know, I don't know that I really want to force my influence about my faith and my religion on my children. I want them to find that on their own." Guess what? If we're not willing to be the influence in our children's life, does that mean that nothing else is going to influence them, right? If we say, "You know, I'm just going to let them find their own way. I don't want to push. Does that mean that no other influence and nothing else is going to come into their life and lead them down some path? Let's see. Do you have a TV in your house? Does that influence your child at all? You got any computers at home? Do they have any of these mobile devices where they can just get online any time of day or night? Do they go to school? Do they have friends at school? Do they have textbooks? Do you know even the textbooks? Innocent little textbooks. Well, they're not little. They weigh about 50 pounds. But these innocent little textbooks at school, are they going to influence the way that your children think about God and about morality, if we're not interested in influencing our kids, guess who is interested in influencing our kids? Samson had everything going for him. Raised in a home where he could become the strongest man in the Bible. That's what we know him as. But did Samson end up having some problems? Here's the strong man. And I wish we had time to go over some of these things, and we only have 15 minutes. That's not fair. There are some things in Samson's life that were not so good, and I want to talk about some of those. But there were some positive virtues in this man. We think about him being strong. Where did his strength come from? His strength came from... Why did his strength come from his long hair? Because he had taken the Nazarite vow, he became strong because of his long hair. Who gave him that strength? God did. Did Samson know that? You can say yes, and that'd be all right. Did Samson know that's where his strength came from? And so when you look at Samson, here's a man, he understood the role that God had for him. And no doubt his mother and his father had explained to him as he was being raised, here's the role, here's the plan that God has for you. He wants you to deliver, to begin to deliver, chapter 13, verse 5, he wants you to begin to deliver his people from the Philistines. Imagine you know that as you grow and as you develop. But here's a man who had great strength and he had great courage. What would you do if you met a lion? In chapter 14, verse 5 says, I like the way it says this at the end of verse 5. Now to his surprise, a young lion came roaring against him. Well, if a young lion came roaring against you, would there be any other reaction but surprise? To his surprise, hello, a lion comes. Now, what would you do? You're hightailing it out of there. You know, yeah, they say play dead, right? Yeah, that's for the people who are slow. You know, you're gone. Play dead my foot. So you're taking off. What does Samson do? Oh, here's a lion. He's got great strength. He's got great courage to go against this lion. Now, what is Samson's purpose in life? To deliver the Philistine, to deliver God's people from the Philistines. Do you think anybody heard the story? Well, he did this, and there wasn't anybody who really knew that he had done this. He did not tell his father, the end of verse 6, did not tell his mother what he had done. But he went down home and but he found this woman that we'll talk about. Hopefully we'll have time to talk about her. But he tears this lion apart. That's pretty impressive. Now, how did he do that at the beginning of verse 6? What does the beginning of verse 6 say? The Spirit of the Lord came mightily upon him. How was he able to tear that lion apart? Spirit of the Lord came upon him. Look over in same chapter. Look in verse 19. This was after he had told this riddle and his wife had snickered it out of him to get it out of him. And you go through this whole story where he's not impressed. Verse 19, what's his purpose now? His purpose is to deliver God's people from the Philistines. So verse 19 says, the Spirit of the Lord came upon him mightily. And he went down to Ashkelon and killed 30 of their men. What's happening here? Little by little, he is going to deliver God's people. And little by little, this message is going to come through. So you get to chapter 15. And in chapter 15 is the story that you read about where he finds 300 foxes in verse 5. Wouldn't you have loved to have seen this? I know you've seen the pictures. You've colored them in your Sunday school class, right? But wouldn't you have liked to have seen this where he takes the foxes, turns them tail to tail, verse 4 says, and ties a torch in between their tails? You ever tried that? What's his purpose again? Did he send them into the Israelite fields? No, that's not his purpose. His purpose is to deliver God's people from the Philistines. And so he sends them into the Philistines' fields. And because of that, down in verse 8 says, he attacked them hip and thigh with a great slaughter. That's his purpose. He's fulfilling the purpose that God gave him. Look in verse 14, chapter 15, verse 14. He came to Lehi. And during this event, there had been a great slaughter in verse 9, and he went and dwelt in the cleft of the rock at the end of verse 8. And so they come to arrest him. It's interesting that when they come to arrest him, verse 11 says they sent 3,000 Jews. Do they think this is going to be tough? Let's go arrest Samson. How many guys do we need? Oh, we might need 10. Oh, we might need 20. How did they get... We might need 3,000 guys to arrest this guy. Yeah? Hello? Probably do. Is that going to be enough? Well, it might not be. 3,000 guys go to arrest him. And Samson basically gives himself over to them, says, you don't kill me. I'll let you arrest me. Because what were they going to do? They're going to turn him over to the Philistines. What's his purpose? To deliver God's people from the Philistines. Where would be a good place for this man to be? How about right in the midst of the Philistines? That's where he goes. So verse 14 says, he came to Lehi. The Philistines came shouting against him. Then the Spirit of the Lord came mightily upon him. The ropes that they had tied around him, he broke those loose with his hands. Verse 15, he found a fresh jawbone of a donkey, reached out his hand and took it, and killed 1,000 men with it. What do we keep reading? Spirit of the Lord came upon him. Spirit of the Lord came upon him. Spirit of the Lord came upon him. Spirit of the Lord. And what was happening? He was fulfilling the purpose that God had for him in delivering God's people from the Philistines. So now you get to chapter 16, And in chapter 16, and I am assuming that we know the story of Samson, because unfortunately we don't have time to tell this whole story. He goes through this process. He goes through this, what do you want to call it, cat and mouse game with Delilah? This back and forth game with Delilah about where his strength comes from. And he misleads her, no wonder men have a bad name, right? Here he is misleading. Now, of course, how many people do we know named Delilah? That's not the most common name today. And I know there are some people who have that name, but that's not the most common name today because of what she was doing in trying to elicit this information out of Samson. But he finally gives in to her. Finally opens, verse 17 says, he told her all of his heart. Found out that he was a Nazarite to God from his womb. And told her that you shave my head and my strength will go from me. Did he know where his strength came from? Absolutely did. Shaved his head in verse 19. What are the last four words of verse 19? At least in my Bible. Last four words of verse 19. His strength left him. Well, his hair left him. What coincided with his hair leaving him? His strength left him. But what was that all about? The end of verse 20. He did not know that the Lord had departed from him. Why did his strength leave him? Was it because of his hair? Well, yes. But it was because of his hair because it was because of God. The Lord had left him. And when the Philistines came in, they took him. And they put his eyes out in verse 21. They bound him with bronze fetters and he became a grinder in the prison. He goes down and he is grinding in the prison. And it comes time for the Philistines to worship and have a party to their god Dagon in verse 23. And there's something about this event that just churned Samson's stomach. Here are these idolaters. Here are these enemies of God. Here are these... Wait a minute. What was my purpose in life? My purpose was to deliver God's people from these people. And what are they doing? They're celebrating not God. They're celebrating Dagon, their god, and it angered him. Now, notice what the end of verse 22 says, or what verse 22 says. The hair on his head began to grow again. I wonder what that could maybe mean. Wonder what that could entail. You know, if you were the Philistines, wouldn't you have somebody watching his hair, by the way? I mean, wouldn't you have a permanent barber around? I mean, just assigned to this guy. Hey, every morning you get up, shave his head. I mean, wouldn't that be like the highest paid guy and all? I mean, that would be, that's like job security. You know, just shave the guy's head. What? Duh. You keep his hair off. But they're not paying attention, right? They're paying attention to their god Dagon. And so Samson's had all he can take. And he has a young man to tell him where the pillars are. He's stationed between the pillars in verse 25. Verse 26, he asked the lad, "Put my hands on the pillars that I may lean against them." Verse 27, the temple was full of men and women. The lords of the Philistines were there, about 3,000 men and women on the rooftop watching Samson perform. He's going to put on a performance for him. Verse 28, Samson called to the Lord. Samson had a lot of problems in his life. He had done a lot of wrong things, but he had not lost his faith in God. He calls upon the Lord, and it's interesting, in the Hebrew language, there are three different words used here for God just in this one prayer. He says, "O Lord, Jehovah, remember me, I pray." Did he think maybe God had forgotten him? "Strengthen me, I pray." You think he knew where his strength came from? "Just this once." You ever prayed something like that before? "God, would you just help me this one time? Just this once." "O Lord," God at the beginning. Now he says, "O God, that I may with one blow take vengeance on the Philistines." Samson, why didn't you just put a period there? You know, when you read Samson's motivation throughout these chapters, this is what it always is. It's like this: "That I may take vengeance on them for my two eyes." Samson, what's your purpose? Deliver God's people from the Philistines. But you read these chapters and you know what his focus is? It's always on himself. He is so full of himself, it's unbelievable. But what did God do? Samson took hold of the two middle pillars which supported the temple. He braced himself against them, one in his right hand, one in his left hand. "Let me die with the Philistines." And he pulled down the temple. The dead that he killed at his death were more than those that he killed in his life. How was he able to do that? Because the Spirit of the Lord came upon him again. Here was a man that had a lot of issues in his life, had gone through a number of things that he should not have done, but apparently he continued to have faith in his God and was willing to continue to be used to deliver God's people, which was his very purpose, even to the very moment of his death. Now, how long did Samson judge? How long was he a judge? 20 years. You got the last verse of that chapter in chapter 16 says it. Last verse of chapter 15 says it. He judged Israel for 20 years. What we read about Samson in these chapters, surely there was more that we don't see in 20 years than what we see just in these four chapters. But we sure see some things about Samson in these chapters that is not very good. And we're not going to look at, we've looked at his background and his parental strength that he should have had, looked at some of his virtues. But there were a lot of vices, a lot of sins that Samson gave. We won't go through them on the PowerPoint, but what are some of them? Was he selfish? Remember back in chapter 14? He goes down to Timnah. He sees a woman there who he wants to have as a wife. Chapter 4, he comes back home. He says to his mother and father, what? "Get her for me." And was it verse 3 where his father says, "Look, we're not supposed to marry." You know, remember Exodus 23, Exodus 32, Deuteronomy. Over and over, the Jews are told not to intermarry, but to marry someone of your Jewish heritage. No, no, no. So his father says, "Isn't there someone among our..." No, no. "Go get her for me." What a selfish brat. Here was somebody who disregarded and rejected his parents' wisdom and rebelled against God's plan. What else do you read about Samson that was not so good? Say again. Was he a bit promiscuous? Let's see. He goes down to Timnah, finds this woman. Apparently, you know, we read this and we don't think he knows much about her. He just sees her and says, "That's the woman I want." Marries her. How'd that work out for him? You read the rest of the chapter. That didn't work out so well. And at the end of the chapter, in the beginning of chapter 15, her father gives him to his best man. We read about that today, right? So his father gave her to his best man, and that didn't work out so well, and he got mad about all of that, and that's when you read about the foxes. But was he promiscuous? You get to chapter 16, and he goes down to the Philistine city of... Why does he keep going to the Philistines? He goes down to the Philistine city of Gaza and finds a prostitute. Well, that's a good idea, Samson. And then four verses later, he goes and finds Delilah. She was a real winner, wasn't she? She was somebody you want to write home to mom about. Guess who I met? I met this woman who's so conniving. She just keeps coming and asking me the same question. I just keep lying to her. But mom, she is just so beautiful. But boy, she's trying to trip me up. I mean, is this somebody that's great? What a loser. But promiscuous, yeah. What else do you read about Samson? What was it? Stupid. Well, that. When you begin to see, you know, we read about the judges in a cycle. You sort of see Samson in a cycle too, right? Woman, bad news. Woman, bad news. Woman, bad news. You know, he just kept going through that same cycle. Not real good. What else do we read about Samson? Say again. Oh, yeah, yeah. This guy's got a temper. He got angry pretty easily. Was he good at choosing friends? Not so good. Do our friends have an influence on us? Yeah, and when you read about Samson, guess what you read about? His friends be more of an influence on him than he was apparently on some of them. Samson's an interesting Bible character. He's one of our favorite Bible heroes. And there's some things to look at in his life that may be something we would emulate. There's a lot of things in his life that we wouldn't emulate. But here's some interesting things as we close up real quick. God had a purpose. Deliver the Philistines. Was God going to fulfill his purpose? Yes. Didn't matter who it was. God was going to take care of his people. And he was going to use whoever was in that role. But here's an interesting verse in Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 32. You don't even have to turn there if you don't want to. When I just say Hebrews chapter 11, what do you know? Faith chapter. Who's in the faith chapter? People like Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Moses, and Samson. Go figure. You read all of these Bible heroes, these men of faith, women of faith, and you even get down and included in that chapter is Samson. There's 20 years of his reign, of his rule, of his deliverance. We don't read all of those, but we read certain snapshots. We say, wow, that's not who we need to be. But yet, remember Oliver Cromwell. What did he say? That's who I am, warts and all. When God looks at us, does he see our warts? Yep. Is that okay? Should we just say, hey, those are my warts. God, you got to deal with them. Or should we be trying to overcome them, to remove them from our lives? But can God still use us to fulfill his purpose? Yes. And we need to allow ourselves to be instruments in his hand to do that.